Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and cheerfully admits it may struggle to read its own handwriting, having started the script several hours after Palace beat Spurs. I'm Kevin Day. He's Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, yes, well done. Brighton won as well. Big whoop. But talking of pubs, Kieran, you need to know that your reputation precedes you.
Oh, lordy.
Oh, yes, indeed. Because, you know, we normally record this on a Sunday morning, as our listeners know. But late on Saturday evening, I announced to the pub that I had to go, and the pub said, no, stay for a few more drinks. And somebody said, why don't you ask Kieran if he can do it a bit later tomorrow, just to give you a bit of leeway. So I thought that was a good idea. So I texted you, Kieran, and then I had to tell everyone that you'd said, I can't do later because I'm seeing the Sisters of Mercy. And five people immediately said, what, he's going back to Moscow? which I thought was and talking of pubs, Kieran, how was your pre-match gastro pub meal with our regular listener Stuart Hatcher?
It was absolutely brilliant. The pilot in Chiswick was superb. And of course, you're invited there. Stuart was a very good host and kept us entertained. And Brentford's new ground is one of those grounds which, as an away fan, people will love because it's got a low roof. You're all there pretty crammed in together and you can make an awful lot of noise.
Stuart, mental note, don't try and entertain me. It won't work. Never try and entertain a comedian. You just get the Mount Rushmore look in return. It's questions day, Kieran, but I include this one news item, partly, I have to say, by way of a teaser for an interview that we have on our next show. Oldham tried to ban their own fans from buying tickets for the away game at Leyton Orient on Saturday, but Leyton Orient wouldn't play ball.
Yes, it looks as if Oldham are trying to make things awkward for their fans to attend matches, both home and away, by effectively not selling certainly away tickets in advance as you would normally acquire them. But Leyton Orient put out a release. Ultimately, it's their money, remember, and there is supposed to be a gentleman's agreement that we all support each other. So Leyton Orient said, we will have tickets available on the day and we will allow Oldham fans to bring in flags and banners. And my understanding is that the Oldham fans were impeccably behaved. Some of them were wearing tangerine wigs for reasons which we'll have to find out in due course. I'm not quite sure of the logic behind that one. Sadly for Oldham, they lost the match 4-0, which I think is indicative of the problems that the club has got on and off the pitch.
Yeah, I can't see the club, so I'm trying to be neutral here, Kieran. I'm trying to be a grown-up podcast host here, which will surprise many people listening to this. But I can see for an away game, the angry Oldham owners won't lose any money by trying to ban troublemaking fans, as they would call them. But the home games, they're stopping so many people from buying tickets now that they think aren't the right sort of fan, that they're going to be losing a fortune on match day, which can't help. It's like they're banning the Atleticos. Their ultras, who are basically a group of passionate young fans. So that's money they're not getting in. I can't understand their logic.
For some people, they will put ego and vanity above financial common sense. And this appears to be the case at Oldham. Clearly their lines are drawn. We've seen what has happened at other clubs when there has been a serious fallout between club owners and fan groups. I think there's got to be, if there's to be any form of reconciliation, communication, transparency, all the things which we've tried to echo since the start of the podcast, would be appropriate. Nobody at Oldham wants the club to be where it is, currently propping up League Two.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking to Oldham fans on Wednesday. We have put a request into the club to talk to the owners, and none of us are holding our breath, to be honest. I'm going to tell Ali that you said some people put ego and vanity above financial common sense, just to see a look on her face. So, questions day, Kieran, and we have some good questions as ever. And our first one comes from James. James says, it's been a while now since Simon Sadler took over at Blackpool FC and ended our Oyston nightmare. And that's a name we've used many times on this pod. What's the latest picture at Blackpool at the moment? Simon Sadler is a hedge fund manager from Blackpool who said rescuing the club was his civic duty. So we like him. But how are things are at Blackpool now?
Well, in the first year of Simon Sadler's ownership, the club's revenue went up by 20%, and this was on the back of the boycott, which was arranged by Blackpool fan groups such as the Tangerine Knights. They had the Not a Penny More campaign following the behaviour of the Oyston family in the way that the club was run. For people not familiar with Blackpool, Blackpool were promoted to the Premier League, and in their one season in the Premier League, the Oyston family didn't increase the wage bill. In fact, the wage bill for the players, I think, just about fell. Which is unheard of for a club in its first season in the Premier League, but they did pay themselves £11 million as effectively as consultancy fees and dividends, and they just used Blackpool Football Club as a vehicle to financially support some of their other businesses, which is perfectly legal. But as you can understand it from a Blackpool fan's perspective, this was very disappointing. And also, I think as football fans, and this was something we were talking to somebody senior in football recently. He said, every time I put out a press release from the club, before it gets published, I'd always want to say, will the fans buy into this? Does this represent the values that are held by the fan base? And this is where football clubs sometimes can fall down. And having somebody like Owen Oyston associated with the club is going to put you deeply into the negative before you start, and then when the club started suing fans for things that they've said, and sometimes fans do they go over what is acceptable, this further entrenched viewpoints. So they've come from a long way. Simon Sadler is keen to invest in the training facilities. The club is now in the Championship, which is a tremendous achievement. Their last wage bill was on $3,000 a week, compared to 15 is the average in the Championship. So I suspect the wage bill will go up this season, but at least they will have the benefit of more of the TV monies, because in the Championship, 80% of the EFL's TV money goes to clubs in the Championship, and the other 20% is shared in the lower two divisions.
Yeah, we firmly share the belief, Kieran, that every club is historically important. We know that. It means the world to its supporters. But some clubs have a more historical significance than others, and owners of those clubs are beholden, I think, to recognise that. And the Oystons didn't. Every football fan, even an eight-year-old, by osmosis, if they're a football fan in a football family, would have heard of Blackpool. They'll know about the Tangerine Kit. They'll know about the Stanley Matthews final. They'll know that Blackpool was a traditional powerhouse of a club. So when people own that club, that should be acknowledged. And Simon Sadler, it seems to me, has done that. And also, I thought it was very interesting. I was reading an interview last night by him. He says, and he wants to make the distinction, that it's his money that's bought the football club, not the hedge funds. That's important, presumably, isn't it?
Yes, because a hedge fund is looking for a financial return on investment. And from looking at Simon Sadler's comments, his focus is he was lucky enough to have grown up in Blackpool. He's got an affection, as most people do have, for their hometown, and he's been successful in business, and he wants to reinvest his money, which he's earned, from being a success in his private business. So this means that the investors in the hedge fund, they don't need to worry about whether money is being put into a football club, which is, let's face it, it's probably going to lose money. And Blackpool fans can, I think, have some comfort in the sense that they know that money's not going to be started to be demanded back because it's coming from Simon himself and not the organisation he represents.
Our next question comes from Alan Marples. And Alan says that he's a Sheffield Wednesday fan who has also followed Glasgow Rangers results from afar since the 1990s, which I think, Alan, sounds to me like a euphemism for I support two teams. I think you're allowed to have a Scottish team. That's okay. But Alan's question is this. Why were Rangers, back in the 90s when I started supporting them /following their results from afar, why were they able to attract big names such as Laudrup, Gascoigne, Ritson, the De Boers, and many more? Were they merely living beyond their means back then, or is Scottish football simply less desirable now?
Well, I did some spreadsheet ferreting, which is not a euphemism for anything else.
It's the best sort of ferreting, Kieran, as far as I'm concerned. It's a sordid image, isn't it?
Indeed.
Kieran, what are you doing up there? Nothing, Mum. Are you spreadsheet ferreting again? No. Me, I have to clean them, you know. This is apropos of that subject. I once said to a friend of mine, his son was a proper teenager. Yeah. I said, how's he getting? I said, he's all right. So Tom is at the moment, we have to change his sheets with a toffee hammer.
Brilliant. Getting back to Rangers. In 1992-93, Glasgow Rangers generated the second highest revenue of any club in the UK. They were only behind Manchester United. And to give you an insight into just how big Glasgow Rangers were at that time, they were generating twice the amount of income as Chelsea and Manchester City.
Wow.
So that's that, and that was in the very first season of the Premier League.
And was that off the back of huge crowds?
It was that huge crowds. They had good sponsorship deals. Mm. Scottish football was on a roll. And even Celtic were generating more revenue than Chelsea and Manchester City. Wow. As well. So, since then, the Premier League has been amazingly successful. So we've got Rangers' revenue has trebled in the 27-28 season since then, whereas Manchester City's has gone from 8 million to 478.
Wow.
So Rangers has gone from 20 to 59. So what's happened is that the Premier League has been a juggernaut, and Scottish football, for a variety of reasons, ultimately it's a smaller country. In those days, it didn't have the same vision of the Premier League in selling international rights, and the Premier League got overseas first. So that's why the Premier League generates more money from TV than La Liga, Bundesliga, and so on. They got there first to these other countries. The broadcasters realized that the Premier League rights was the one product that stopped people cutting the cord, and therefore they were willing to pay more and more for them. And everybody else has been trailing in the wake. So it's not that Scottish football has been unsuccessful. It's just the Premier League has just blown everybody in the rest of world football out of the water.
Yeah, because I'm always surprised. I imagine for Rangers and Celtic, it would be an easy sell to get decent overseas players or even decent English players to come. You know, decent wages, virtually guaranteed European football of some sort, wonderful place to live. And yet, as Alan points out, those days of English players flocking north of the border have long gone, haven't they?
Yes. I mean, if you take a look at Rangers' wage bill, it is it's higher than most clubs in the Championship, but not all. But it's between a half and an eighth of that of the Premier League. Where do players want to go? Well, the prospect of European football is something, but you've got to be in the Champions League group stages. And then there is the glamour of the Premier League, which is unsurpassed. You know, Scottish football is very much focused on the two Glasgow clubs, whereas I think it's the interest is broader. And you know, if you're an international player playing at Ibrox or Celtic Park, you know, eat once a fortnight would be fantastic. Very passionate fans. But even if you come to a mid-tier club in the Premier League, going to Anfield, Old Trafford, the Etihad, the Emirates, you know, Stamford Bridge, footballers are still kids, same we are in terms of certain aspects of football, and being able to go to those iconic places is another attraction.
We're kids in a lot of aspects of life. You only have to listen to the jokes we've been laughing at early on in this pod. Yeah, it's funny because we attracted Odson Edouard down from Celtic, who made his debut yesterday, scoring 2 goals in 6 minutes, which is unprecedented for us. In the pub afterwards, this young fellow said, I feel a bit sorry for Benteke because Edouard was just like, happened to be in the right place at the right time, didn't he? And it's like, that's the exact definition of a striker.
Yes.
Benteke should be sitting on the bench going, oh, there. Oh, I see. Right, gotcha. Our next question comes from Ray Challenger.
What a name.
Okay, that's one of our better names, isn't it, Ray Challenger? There must be an episode of Thunderbird somewhere that includes the words, get me Ray Challenger. There are some miners trapped underground. We need Ray Challenger. It's a great name, and it's also a great, if slightly disturbing, question, Kieran. And Ray says, although we haven't lost clubs to COVID as things stand, do you feel this is more to do with government tax relief, furlough, and various other schemes, and that the real danger of losing clubs will come when these schemes end and some monies may have to be paid back? Which is a fair point, Kieran, because many people in my industry had mortgage holidays, tax, VAT deferrals, which were very welcome at the time, but we'll be paying those back for the next 3 years. So what seemed brilliant at the time is actually causing financial problems in the near future. So is that possibly the same for football?
Yes, it is. I think the policies of the government through the furlough scheme, tax delay, and so on, gave the football industry breathing space. And we only lost Macclesfield Town. And if we're honest, Macclesfield Town were not lost due to COVID. Didn't help, but it was a combination of poor ownership, which had been, the wages weren't being paid, and what appeared to be a fairly concentrated effort by the EFL to get Macclesfield Town out of the 92 or out of the 91, because they could see the writing on the wall, and they didn't want the same degree of attention that arose when Bury went bust. So you know, that was achieved. Macclesfield Town went bust in sort of the what's sometimes referred to as the Biffin Bridge, between when you are relegated from the EFL and before you formally join the National League. So I think football's done well, but we've also got to give credit. You know, the EFL has advanced TV monies, and some of the clubs are under sort of these things called monitored loans. The Premier League, after enough people shouted at it, did give loans and grants worth £50 million. Wages have topped off or topped out, especially in the lower leagues. There's evidence, I think, especially in League Two, that wage levels have come down. And you've also got to be grateful for the fact that owners have stuck their hands in the pockets, as they have done historically, and many fans have done their own right thing. Well, not right thing, but you know, they were in a position to be able to support the club by deferring season ticket refunds or donating them to the club. And you know, we've muddled through. But the core issues of the problems of finances within football have not gone away. They've just been amplified by COVID. We are not out of the woods by a long way.
It's quite a bold claim, Kieran, that you've made before, that the EFL kind of waved Macclesfield out, if you like. And it's going on to the list of questions that we will ask the EFL. We've had indications from the EFL that somebody very senior there will talk to us. They just want to take a little bit of a deep breath and hear more of our voice on the pod first, but they are going to talk to us. So that's something we will put to them. I remember, Kieran, as COVID hit, on a particularly bad, pessimistic day that we had, you predicted that we could lose up to 40 clubs, and we haven't done that. But do you think there's any risk that we will lose any of those clubs, genuinely, because of having to pay back government furlough schemes, etc.?
Had the furlough schemes, the loans from the EFL, the advances from the Premier League, had those not taken place, we would have lost a significant number of clubs. So you've got to give plaudits to all involved there. I think there is far less chance of clubs going to the wall, but as we've seen with Oldham, there are problems. We are becoming friendly with far too many supporters groups. And it's not because we don't want to be friendly with supporters groups, but we're dealing with supporters groups of clubs who are in crisis. So, we've spoken to the likes of Newcastle, Swindon, Rochdale, and now we're having Oldham on the show. Yeah. We've also spoken to people in non-league. So there are ongoing issues. The governance problems within football, the lack of desire for scrutiny, the lack of desire for transparency by the people in charge of clubs, because it's my club, it's a company, it's my company, my own, it's nothing to do with you. That applies to that applies legally to all companies. You can understand if you're a washing machine parts manufacturer why that would be the case. But I think the argument, and this was something which was very much highlighted by Tracy Crouch's interim report to Oliver Dowden, is that football clubs mean more than that. If the government accepts that, then some form of change to governance, I think, is likely to be on the cards.
Mm. Andy Adams has our next question, and Andy says, with the announcement that the Dutch and Belgian leagues will combine, how close does that bring us to an Atlantic League, and where will that leave the rest of Scottish football if it happens? My instinct, Kieran, is that it takes us further from an Atlantic League, because the Dutch and Belgian leagues clearly aren't inviting Scottish clubs or Norwegian clubs or any of the other potential clubs in the Atlantic League to join them.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, when the Atlantic League was first discussed, and this was around about 2001, at the time it was Scotland, Portugal, Belgium and the Netherlands. Now it looks as if clearly the Belgium and the Netherlands have gone off, to further explore a joint proposal. The Scandinavian leagues have come into play, so Denmark and Norway could join up with Scotland and potentially Ireland as well. So that would give us those countries a sort of a critical mass. And I believe that JP Morgan, who were has to be said, the bank behind Super League, they have had talks with some of the football authorities, according to some reports, with a view to working out whether this is feasible. But Dermot Desmond, who's the owner of Celtic, he refused to play ball. I think without Scottish involvement, I'm not convinced you would have enough gravity of the competition to necessarily make it worthwhile. And the other issue, sort of the other sort of fly in the ointment, is presently we're talking about three or four countries who individually are entitled to UEFA places. So conceivably you could have two clubs from Portugal, two clubs from Scotland, one or two clubs from Denmark and so on going into the Champions League on an individual basis. If they then combine into a single competition, if we're honest, they're going to be sharing one or two places between them all. And is that actually in the interests of the bigger clubs in those divisions?
Yeah, have you seen any, have you seen any indication of how the Dutch and Belgian league combination will work? Will it be the top six from each country go into a separate league? This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level is, for somebody whose life is quite chaotic and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
That would appear to be the case with the clubs who fall below the threshold, effectively joining up with the equivalent of their second division. And then what happens in terms of promotion and relegation? Because what happens, for example, if it's two up, two down, or three up, three down, and all three clubs from the Netherlands finish in the bottom three positions? Do they automatically get filled by three clubs from the Netherlands, or should it be the champions of the Belgian feeder league, for want of a better league? So there's a lot of detail, and that's the problem. Yeah, when you start to look at it from a project management point of view, for every solution there tends to be another two or three problems arising, and it's going to involve an awful lot of hard work, should it ever come to light, to make sure that you don't end up in 10 years' time with a Super League, with a combined Belgian and Netherlands league, which consists of, say, 10 clubs from the Netherlands and two from Belgium, or vice versa, because you've lost sort of the original logic behind it.
Well, see, there you've hit the problem on the head, because I think most football fans would accept that Dutch football is probably slightly ahead of Belgian football, so there will need to be some way of making sure it's equal. But then broadcasters are going to say, well, we want the clubs that are traditionally more successful.
It's trying to keep everybody happy. And what is the driver behind all of this? Well, it's money. Belgium, whilst it's producing superb individual footballers, the Jupiter League, which is Belgium's national competition, that doesn't generate huge amounts of revenue on its own rights from broadcasting. So therefore combining with other leagues, so you've got to keep the broadcasters happy, but you know, if you, you've got to keep the fans happy as well, because they're the people paying for the subscriptions.
Mm. Our next question, Kieran, comes from Victoria Jong. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. It's spelt J-H-O-N-G, and I believe that's how it's pronounced. Victoria, if it's not, my apologies. But this is a very interesting question. Victoria asks, did the 2008-09 financial crisis see a rise in surprise relegations? If so, could the pandemic see a similar short-term effect?
If we take a look at relegation in 2008-09, from the Premier League, it was Newcastle, Middlesbrough and West Brom. I think Newcastle were having a hangover from the newly arrived Mike Ashley, so that was a contributory factor. If we take a look at the Championship, Norwich, Southampton and Charlton. Most people have been surprised that two clubs of the size of Norwich and Southampton were relegated. So it certainly adds some credence to Victoria's comments. However, I went into another spreadsheet.
did you ferret in this one or just no ferret?
I'm just glad you were sitting down when I said that, because you know, otherwise you'd have been gobsmacked, wouldn't you? And
I could be gobsmacked sitting down, Kieran. You don't have to be standing up to be gobsmacked.
And as far as the Premier League was concerned, whilst there was a global financial crisis, the football was relatively immune from it, because it hit the finance industry to a greater extent than something which is consumed in the way that football is. So Premier League income actually increased by 5% that season, and transfer spend was the second highest in the history of the Premier League, which I think is indicative to a certain extent of the bubble in which we exist in football, in terms of football. And we've seen similar with regards to COVID, sort of linking it to Victoria's comments. We've just come off a season where clubs have had, we might as well say zero. Yeah, having a couple of matches for small crowds, it's pretty close to zero income in coming through the turnstiles. And yet in the Premier League, it still managed to find £1 billion to spend in the transfer market. Certainly there's been caution lower down the leagues. But if you talk to some of the people that support League One clubs, I think League One spending has been quite phenomenal by its standards. So football sort of exists outside of reality in certain aspects. And the financial crisis, which was caused by short selling and unusual financial instruments. And I used to teach a course on Wall Street called Creative Accounting for Bankers. And after the 2008-09 crisis, I was no longer allowed to teach that course.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yes. Well, mainly because I said, I think from an ethical point of view, it doesn't reflect A, well on you as the client, or B, well on me either. Ultimately, I enjoy teaching for the sake of enjoying teaching. So I put this to a senior banker, and he says, thank you very much, I'll take your view. And then 2 days later, he phoned me up and says, here's a deal. I'll pay you an extra £500 a day to deliver it. I say, well, yeah, it's very kind of you, but money isn't the motivator for me. And then he says, but another solution, I want you to call it advanced accounting for bankers rather than creative accounting for bankers. So we shook hands on it.
Well, and you did it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you know what, Kieran? You've pulled the rug from under my feet there, because I was just about to say, you're too honest, Kieran, you know that. And then suddenly at the end, you went all Uncle Terry and found a way around the problem. I was just thinking, what a high integrity levels this man has. I don't deserve to share a pod with him. And he said, oh, no, he changed the name and I took the money. Oh,
well, I read A Man for All Seasons, and it does say that every man has his price.
That's true. Yours is higher than mine. And I'm going to do something here, Kieran, that I rarely do, which is be fair to Charlton fans, because I think if Charlton, Southampton and Norwich were relegated from the Championships that season, that's three big clubs that were relegated, because it wasn't long since Charlton were an established Premier League team as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our penultimate question. Sorry about the frog in my throat today. I have this thing, Kieran, that you know about, that our listeners have this autoimmune disease called sarcoidosis, which occasionally dumps large amounts of glucose around my body, and it's done so in my throat recently.
Right.
Yes, it's very unusual. So I get specialist care. It's mainly prevalent in Afro-Caribbean men over the age of 70. So my my specialist loves me, and I've heard some brilliant stories in the waiting room. Ross Wood has our penultimate question, and Ross's question is about Wolves accounts. And I'm going to be honest with you here, Kieran, writing this about 9:30 last night.
I can imagine. I guess that.
in that mode, you know, about an hour before Match of the Day, where you're just in that mode, where you're just praying for Match of the Day to be on. So I was writing this question. I had to have a couple of run-ups and a visit to the fridge. But Ross Wood has this question about Wolves accounts. In the post-balance sheet events section, I saw that the club have increased their term loan to £60 million with an additional borrowing facility up to £15 million, so potentially up to £75 million, secured on future Premier League revenue. The full amount falls due in the event of relegation. Is this common practice?
Yes, is the short answer. Mm-hmm. And the slightly longer answer is that, again, following on from COVID, football clubs in the Premier League were losing money. So Wolves lost £40 million in 2020, even though it was only their second season in the Premier League. And this is one of the things that we are seeing. In the year they get promoted, they tend to make a small profit, and then the expectations of fans is spend more money. Players go to the club and say, well, come on, folks, you know, we've just allowed you to survive in your first season in the Premier League. We want more money as well. So all of this helps to drive up overall costs. So Wolves did lose a lot of money, and therefore they can either go to their owners for a loan, which in the case of Wolves is Fosun, or they can look to third parties. So getting loans which are secured on future TV monies is common. Leicester have done it, Sheffield United have done it, Southampton and other clubs. So this is a very common feature. The normal high street bank manager won't do this, but what the banks are doing is that they're setting up specialist units. So you've either got precise banks or sort of, you know, niche banks such as Macquarie involved, or if it's some of the larger banks such as the likes of Barclays and Santander, they will have a specialist lending unit for a niche industry such as football, partly due to the fact that actually that they're not particularly bothered about the loans to the clubs. They are trying to get into the players to provide financial services for them.
Right.
Because, yeah, football players, yeah, the average salary of a footballer is, yeah, it's around about £2.5 million a year in the Premier League. And being able to provide financial products for the players is actually very lucrative.
So if the full amount falls due in the event of relegation, Kieran, I'm guessing that pre-parachute payment days, these loans wouldn't have been given.
That's right, yes. So, parachute payments are a paradox. You know, in an ideal world, do we want to get rid of them? Yes, because there's no need for them. But in the meantime, they do help clubs to survive in the Premier League by making them more competitive, and if the worst happens, then it does give them a bit of leeway when they drop down into the Championship. But I've been doing some research recently, and clubs that get relegated to the Championship actually tend to be making higher average losses than the established clubs there. So,
oh, okay.
But that does not mean at all that I'm advocating bigger parachute payments. I think they should be shorter and lower, but not abolished altogether.
But as Ross Wood points out, it doesn't give Wolves much leeway. If they were to be relegated, and £75 million of that parachute payment goes straight to paying back a loan.
Yeah, it would force them to sell players.
Cool, okay. So it's a risky loan move then, isn't it?
There's risks in all forms of borrowing, but if that also allows the club to survive and thrive in the Premier League, then that will be deemed to have been warranted.
Yeah. Our last question, Kieran, comes from, he's from Brighton, it turns out, so I don't really care if I get his name wrong. To be perfectly honest, it's DAUWALDER. There are so many potential combinations. It's Stuart Dalwalder. Let's go for the Stuart Dalwalder. And Stuart says, there's a lottery sleepstake.
Sleepstake?
I'll have one of those, yeah. I'll have two of the sleepstakes, please. that'll be a ribeye that's closed.
Hey!
There's a lottery sweepstake at my work where myself and two friends have agreed that if we win, we'll buy a local football club. We're in Brighton, so presumably they work in a wind chime factory or a llama farm. So Stuart says, we've decided already that we'll buy Southwick or Shoreham. If we win several millions, would this be a good idea, or is football ownership at any level just not worth the risk? And also, sorry, Kieran, this is where it gets a bit awkward, Kieran. I don't know if I should read this bit out, but Stuart says that Kieran marked some ACCA papers and I failed my last exam by a few percent. So the least he can do is answer my question. I'm not an expert. I'm really not an expert, Kieran, but I think throwing in phrases like a few percent may get you marked down in the first place, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're harsh. Kieran, I don't like the idea of you failing people. No, that's...
I don't like failing people.
I bet you don't.
Yeah, me. I'm desperate for validation and to be liked.
Well, of course. Well, you know, maybe Stuart should have done what that American banker did and bunged you 500 quid.
Yes.
Is it Southwick, by the way? Was it one of those names
it is Southwick. It is Southwick. Okay. There's various shenanigans taking place in respect to Southwick at the present. Ooh. I think the club is sort of we've got a bit of an AFC Bury situation arising there. But that's for another show. In terms of advice to Stuart, I think you could probably do 101 better things with your money in terms of, because the thing is, several millions won't get you that far. First of all, you've got to buy the club. But then the big issue is you've got the overhead. So if you were taking over a club, let's say you got as far as National League, you'd be writing out a check for £1,000 a day. So yeah, that's on average, and some clubs are losing far more than that. And ultimately, what are you doing? You'd be far better off just getting yourself, some nicer seats, add a couple of craft ales to what's offered at Southwick. I think that'll probably go down better, because football fans are ungrateful. Yeah. Okay, I can assure you. The Brighton owners put in £400 million, and there is a section of the fan base that does nothing but bitch that we're not spending. Spending other people's money is a right, according to some. And this is where I do feel slightly uncomfortable. Yeah, and there's big clubs out there who get exactly the same degree of grief, because I think we've been conditioned, and this is not having a pop at any media organization in particular, but we've been conditioned by the media to think that spending lots of money is a sign of success, is the right thing to do. And then, the next day they're wondering why clubs are about to go bust and, that they're losing so much money. And you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, Brighton fans can't be happy, Kieran, this week with the notion that they will be charged £20 for transferring their ticket to somebody if they can't attend a match.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not happy about that. I've paid for my season ticket, and again, this goes back to something which we've discussed before. If I I've got term starting soon in Liverpool, so therefore I'm travelling up. I'm commuting. If a match gets transferred to 4 o'clock on a or 4:30 on a Sunday, I can't go to it. Now all the matches on a Monday because I'm a Saturday 3 p.m. guy. So you know, it really galls me that it's going to cost me £20 extra to allow me to be able to transfer my season ticket to somebody else, and they've got to pay £20 to be part of the scheme as well. And it's not a scheme which has gone down well with the fan base. Appreciate the club has got to look at all means of raising money, but you know, I bought the tickets in the belief that I'd be able to see us regularly on a Saturday. I get on my soapbox about this. If Sky do change the matches, then I think fans should be entitled, you know, within 14 days of that announcement to send the ticket back to the club and get a refund and say to the club, it's now your problem to resell the ticket because you've mucked up. I've commitment to see my family. I'm going to see the Sisters of Mercy or whatever it's going to be. We can't be expected to change our lives at 6 weeks notice purely at the behest of BT and Sky.
Here. And it's not just Brighton, Kieran. Other clubs in the Premier League are doing it as well, which probably is one of the drivers behind this ludicrous move to 100% digital tickets, because they'll be much harder to transfer than just giving your wallet to a mate. But it's short-sighted, Kieran, because your seat that's left empty, that empty seat isn't spending £20 in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, if you give your ticket to somebody else who maybe doesn't go to a game very often, they're going to be excited, they're going to be buying pies and pints, and that's money the club doesn't get. And it's possibly likely to be more than the £20 they charge you. Well, you know, it's just... And also just in terms of goodwill, it's just like season ticket holders should be rewarded, not punished. I mean, these are the most loyal of your fans. It's like somebody was saying, you know, Palace have had terrible problems with ticketing, digital ticketing system. It's like, why not give all the season ticket holders 500 extra loyalty points?
Yeah.
Or just something, or a free pie, just something to say, look, we're really sorry about this. We know it's a problem. And the words from the club have been fantastic. They've been very, very apologetic. But sometimes that's kind of not enough for people that have been following the club home and away for years. Just throw us a little something as a thank you for the patience. Or on the other hand, you could beat Spurs 3-0. Does that did it?
Yes.
No one was talking about tickets in the pub afterwards.
Yes. Yeah, well, we were serenading our owner yesterday with following the success of. Beating Brentford, but during the match, and this was clearly slightly awkward for him because he's in amongst the fans, he's there with his young son, and as you know, we sold Ben White to Arsenal during the summer. So the song was 50 million in the bank. Tony Bloom is having a, and he's looking slightly embarrassed, and the hands are going over his son's ears.
That's very funny. His son's heard that word before.
I'm sure. Oh, well, that's one of our earlier stories.
Maybe not in Brighton. You never know. Yeah, a friend of mine was, God knows why, because he's a wrong'un, but he managed. he got himself invited into the director's box at Palace yesterday, and was just along the road from Daniel Levy, and took great delight in sending us photographs that he took as each Palace goal went in. He took a picture of Daniel Levy, who by the third goal was slumped in his seat. Which is hilarious. But going back to the original question from Stuart, it's amazing, Kieran, the lure of football for all fans is that we all say, we've all said it at some stage, if I win the lottery, I'm going to buy a football club. Because that, it's just something about that glamour, that allure, that, you know, and even though we know that it's a stupid thing to do, but it's just, just that association of being part of a football club, of getting invited into boardrooms. And essentially that's what happens to some well-meaning people who do buy clubs and get it wrong. Mark Goldberg, for example, was a Palace fan who bought the club and regretted it. You know.
Yeah, and you can, you know, you and I would both do the same, wouldn't we? It's part of the romance of the game, and that's why there's this continual conveyor belt of people wanting to buy clubs. It, barely a week goes by these days when I don't get a call from some broker or lawyer or somebody to say, such and such a club, how would you value it? Could you give us a bit of an oversight of where their finances are? Because I've got a client who's interested. And you're not doing that in the washing machine components industry, are you?
I don't think I would be buying a club, Kieran, even if I had the money, because it's on Ali's to-do list every day. Stop Kevin buying football club. I'm going to have to go now, Kieran, because it seems that my dad is doing press-ups on the sink.
Right.
Which is not a good look. Bless him.
Yes, absolutely.
If you'd like to make a donation to our always free-to-air podcast, then that'd be lovely of you. Please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have any questions for our future questions pod, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. He's doing press-ups. No, he's trying to do a pull-up on the bathroom door.
All right.
I'm going to have to put a stop. He's 87, Kieran. He's from South London, so he's turned the kitchen into an assault course. Why not? While I'm sorting that out, I shall hand you over to Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Once again, folks, thanks for the support. In all means, putting us to rights where we've done wrongs, which people are very good at doing, and sometimes using some pretty direct language as well. But if you want to support the podcast, Patreon's one vehicle for as little as £1 a month. Alternatively, just go along to the Apple Podcast app and follow us there. And if you can give us a 5-star review, we do not understand why, but it helps us in the business. You can write anything you want. You can say, the show would be better presented by Gavin Williamson and Marcus Rashford, for example. that will cause confusion.
I love that phrase. We've done wrongs. Oh, boy, have we done wrongs. You know what I'm worried about with my dad is he seems to have turned the kitchen into a prison gym.
Oh, good grief.
I know. It worries me because maybe he wasn't in the Merchant Navy for 2 years after all.
Well, ask him if he knows Terry Maguire from The Elephant and Castle, and that will probably give you your answer.
Everyone around here knows Terry Maguire from The Elephant and Castle. Most of my street owes him money. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.